So Shankar, it sounds like Synapsys has made some changes in the way it organizes development teams. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so basically about a year ago, we made a decision internally to bring all the EDA software groups at Synapsys together into one organization. Largely because, you know, we have seen the benefits of fusing the boundaries of EDA. We saw it first with Fusion when we brought like Synthesis and PNR and sign-off together, and mm-hmm. then we've been fusing progressively more and more pieces. And really, in addition to just building the best engine, to get the best solution, you have to optimize at the edges, right? So we made that transition about a year ago. That basically gave us an opportunity to look at the whole EDA flow as a single stack, from mm-hmm. architecture to design, verification, test, all the way to TCAD manufacturing. So we are really driving two key concepts across this stack. The first one is we call hyperconvergence, which is every intersection of elements. How do you fuse it? How do you share engines? How do you really make it predictable, correlated, so that you can, you know, when you go from one step to the next step to the next step, there is no ping pong effect, right? That's one of the big challenges when you get to the latest nodes, that mm-hmm. what you model in one place, if it's miscorrelated with a different place, then you get a big fluctuation. So that hyperconvergence concept, we are rapidly bringing these domains together. Like we're getting verification, implementation, much tighter implementation, sign-off and test and failure analysis much tighter. So that's one concept. And the second key concept was to drive AI across the whole stack, which is, so we pioneered it with design, as you know, a few years ago with DSO. And you know, as we saw that basically getting rapidly adopted, and we learned from that to build the next generation of that, we basically also saw the application of applying it across the whole stack and solving some of the big challenges in every one of those domains. So in verification, ability to achieve your coverage closure with the minimum number of tests, in the whole test and manufacturing area, to cut down the number of patterns, mm-hmm. To reduce the test cost, or in the manufacturing area, to build better models for lithography. So all these became areas where, of course, we keep improving it, as we always do, but this became like a disruptive technique. And so we had to really reorganize the team to really drive AI as a horizontal across all the teams. And really the best way this works is when you have domain expertise and AI expertise really working side by side. So we had to do several organizational adjustments to enable that to happen. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, multiple ideas failed, mm-hmm. and then a few worked. Mm-hmm. And today what you're seeing is a sampling of the things that worked, right? So it's really been a quite a transformative story, because, you know, in a, typically with AI, right, the first thing is the experts in a given area will say, that's just a bunch of hype. It's not going to help my business. I know my area really, really well. So there's some education needed. You have to see, they have to kind of get convinced. Then you have to have the right pairing of the domain expert with the AI expert. And then some sparks will fly, and then mm-hmm. eventually some breakthrough will come. And we have been doing it kind of pretty much across the whole stack. And so today we have talked about a few of them. We have a few more in the pipeline that are going to be coming out in the next several months. So mm-hmm. that's really one, that's really the approach we have taken to mm-hmm. build the Synapsys.ai.
So obviously there are going to be more blades in a rack, so to speak, kind of a concept, right?
Exactly.
So there'll be more to come there, so that's good. So do you see that the size of the organization needs to increase, or is it more like the composition needs to be changed, or neither?
No, actually, I would say the structure has to be changed. I don't think the size needs to change.
Okay.
The structure needs to change, because it's one of those things where you have to get the coupling of domain expertise with AI expertise. Mm-hmm. Right? And so if you keep all your AI experts in one org and the domain experts in each individual org, you get some level of coupling. If you just move AI experts into every org, they quickly get lost, mm-hmm. because there is no common, you know, sort of strand that binds them. Mm-hmm. So really what I see is really that we are constantly tuning the structure to get the right combination of engineers together to basically deliver these breakthroughs. And of course, the big other component to this is the customer. I mean, I think I wouldn't think, I would attribute a lot of the success we've made in such a short period of time to the fact that we had, you know, all the customers that have spoken today, like MediaTek or Renesas or TSMC or IBM, NVIDIA, working with us and pushing us and, you know, testing early versions, giving feedback, and then really pointing us, working with us to determine the right direction. So that combination of really fast mover in terms of customer, a very innovative, fast moving R&D culture, and then really being bolted to the customer to really pave the way and stay ahead of their requirement. That's really what is the structure that gets the job done.
There's certainly a lot more players that need to make the product compared to, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Correct.
You could just do it. Well, you need to have an understanding of the design, but then EDA tools.
Correct.
But now you need the people to develop the tools. You need the AI experts, and then you need the domain experts from the actual application perspective, at least three, and then you add the customer part to it, too, right?
Exactly.
So if you look at that as an old, then the resources are increasing compared to the old days, right? So I see that as increasing in size.
But Kalar, what I was point out is, see, the reason that is happening now and didn't happen as much before is earlier you got that free 2x kind of benefit because you just made a note change and you basically got the savings.
You got it.
Now when that thing has gone away, then suddenly you still need the 2x, maybe more than 2x if you look at some of the training of large AI systems.
Need
them. It's much more than 2x.
Right.
And so you know that it's no longer going to come from that node transition. You need to go work on domain-specific architectures. You need to work on the whole, you know, what architecture does your system take in terms of memory and compute and latency and you know, accelerators and all that stuff, and then of course within the implementation itself, and how do you adopt the best EDA technologies to get you that delta? So it's really become a all of the above type of an approach to meet that. You know, I think Art called it the push and pull, right? I mean, so there's the tech, you know, the pull from the markets is really strong right now to keep up with their requirements. The Moore's Law is kind of, you know, leveling out in terms of the gains, and that gap needs to get closed by an all of the above strategy, which spans all this. That's why you're seeing such large efforts needed to move the needle.
So this is really going to make it challenging for new point solution EDA companies to crop up, right? I mean, we have seen that over so many years, right? You know, I can be the best placement route or routing company, or, you know, this or that. You see that becoming more and more challenging, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think increasingly things are getting more and more interconnected. That's why this hyper-convergence concept is so important. I mean, but at the same time, you know, there are some, you know, well-contained problems still, you know, in the EDA space, where if there is a 10x, 100x type of improvement available, I mean, you know, there is still an opportunity to go after it. I would say it's, you know, it's becoming increasingly more challenging, but I don't think we are devoid of opportunities. There are still some interesting 10x, 100x impact problems that small teams can go after without really needing to be connected into a large...
Well, let's take, for example, formal verification, right, as a topic. And there are some companies out there who focus on that right now with this. For example, taking your example of within your organization, you have to restructure, you know, how they operate, right, because you have all of those experts. Those companies, just if you, as an example, taking formal verification, how much at a disadvantage are they, smaller companies?
No, so what I would say is, again, you know, in the end, you know, like, so if you take formal verification, right, so if you break it down, to have a complete solution, to even be a player today, you need a solution for data path verification, for formal property checking and verification, for sequential equivalence, logical equivalence. You need to support like a very wide range of RTL constructs to even be able to be functional, right? So there's a high bar to even sort of play. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, if there is this amazing algorithm that does, you know, data path verification better than anything else before, or formal property checking better than anything else before, there is still a niche for that thing to go in and be adopted. But increasingly the problems are becoming so systemically complex that the bar to break in has gotten much higher. But at the same time, you know, I think we are seeing, you know, with some of this big advances like generative AI and so on and so forth, I mean, you know, there's always left field ways to look at old problems and come up with very different solutions. Mm.
So. Well, since you mentioned generative AI and ChatGPT is all the talk everywhere, right? So at this point, you know, even with the 4.0 release, right, do you believe that it can generate decent, for example, Verilog code that you can actually take it 90%, you know, get you there, or is it still lacking? And if it is lacking, in your opinion, because some of the people I talked to, they said, well, it still doesn't do a good job of generating Verilog, right? On the other hand, on pure software, you know, I hear people, it is generating good code, right? So what is your thoughts on that?
I think a big part of it is what it has been trained on. The amount of Verilog that's out there in the public internet is relatively small compared to something like GitHub, which has, you know, billions of lines of C++ or Python to train on. So definitely it has not been trained. Now, that does not mean that a company which has several million lines of system Verilog can't build a localized model based on their code, which is pretty effective and pretty impactful. And again, you know, the thing with all these Copilot type of technologies is that, I mean, it is going to keep getting better and better, and you are going to start seeing more and more of that code being just generated, and then the designer scans it and then drops it into their main implementation. So I think it will keep evolving, like writing test benches, right? Again, something where it will keep getting better. But the key thing is it crawling on enough data for it to be a high-quality model? And I don't believe for hardware it is crawling on enough data, because there isn't enough public hardware descriptions or test benches out there. But a company which has a large amount of RTL and test benches already written up can definitely build a localized model to augment that model and have it be an effective co-pilot for all their designers.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting point. So, you know, with GPT 4.0, they're talking about trillion parameters, right? I'm thinking, well, trillion, you know, you can go to 4 trillion, but is that the key, or is it more like the data you're talking about on which you train? And maybe for semiconductors, even a billion is too many. It's the question of what the parameters are you looking for, right?
No, because, you know, like, for example, I don't think anybody designing a semiconductor chip has to worry about passing some AP biology exam. So there's like, the basic model has been trained on just everything and everything, but you can use the method to create a highly customized model for you know, a specific problem. So I think that's the direction I see this potentially evolving in. And of course, the generic model is great for a lot of generic things. And it'll, you know, for demos and for you know, sure, you
can use exactly
it.
Right.
But for it to be really functional, you need to train it on stuff that is directly relevant to what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. So that gives me good insight on, the restructuring part, and, you know, how you need to make that, you know, seamless and flow, makes it more efficient and stuff like that. So as you do this, so the question is going to be, how quickly can you share? Because I see something developing, you know, you have it, and the next one will be even faster, right? It's like the recursive kind of solutions, right? So customers could be coming to you and say, okay, you know, give me this stuff quicker, right? It's like the SaaS thing, right? Where every day, two releases are made every day compared to 10 years ago, it was once every 6 months, right? So you see that happening, and what kind of a strain is that going to put on EDA industry as a whole?
Yeah, so, you know, the thing is, I mean, we are so on one hand, whoever said Moore's Law is dead should just take a look at things like the iMac roadmap and other stuff. I mean, that progression is continuing to go, right? We're already in the gate-all-around era. We are going to have few generations of that. So there's a tremendous amount of engineering work we are having to do to just enable all that stuff, right? Because you have to pretty much build the whole stack for that type of design. Then you have multi-die, right? We have a ton of work going on to enable multi-die for verification, for test, for reliability, for the design construction, all that kind of stuff. You know, so to me, it's kind of like, so our teams are, you know, we are trying to enable this all of the above strategy just because customers want to just bring this all together. So from our perspective, you know, we don't really see, you know, anything going away. Like if tomorrow somebody said, you know what, this is the last node, then sure, you can take your TCAD people and your OPC people and all these groups and say, okay, let's go look at other problems. But no, the TCAD world is charging ahead with the next transistor and the next materials. The OPC world is charging ahead. I mean, last week, I don't know whether you saw our announcement with NVIDIA on accelerating computational lithography with GPUs. And so we are, you know, we are doing a lot of work there to cut down the total throughput time of mass creation and stuff like that. There is new types of EUV coming online, high NA EUV by 2025. That's going to create more complexity, more models. So it's really, so for a company like Synopsys, right, I mean, we are really in the business of just enabling this all of the above strategy. And so for us, we have roadmaps on all these areas, mm-hmm. and then we have to drive this interest, these horizontal initiatives like AI or hyperconvergence, mm-hmm. To also kind of deliver on those pieces.
Thank you for your time, Shankar. It was a very interesting and insightful conversation.